Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, Nicola Coughlan on her return and centre stage role in Bridgerton, the new season. And I talked to some of the other cast, including Queen Charlotte, Lady Danbury and Lady Violet Bridgerton. Plus, Wes Ball, the director of The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, chats to me about the latest incarnation of the beloved apes. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Good weekend to you all. I do hope you're doing well. I want to start with TV, as I always do, or most weeks I do, or who cares what I usually do. Let's start with it this week and a documentary that I've been watching. She says we gotta hold on to what we've got. It doesn't make a difference if we make it or not. We got each other and that's a lot for love. We'll give it a shot. Oh, we're halfway there. Oh, give it all a prayer. Take my hand. We'll make it. That's on the documentary. That is the sound of Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer. Their greatest song, I think most people would agree. And I'm playing that because it's almost the unofficial soundtrack to the new documentary on Disney, Thank You, Goodnight, The Bon Jovi Story. It launched a couple of weeks ago. Four parts. What we have is the history of the wildly successful Bon Jovi, fronted by their talisman, John Bon Jovi, who came together in the late 70s, early 80s in New Jersey and went on with their second album, Slippery When Wet, and indeed their third album, to have huge success. So we see this story up until the breakup, reforming, Richie Sambora, their guitarist, famously quitting, and it brings it's up to date with what's happening now with Bon Jovi, and in particular John Bon Jovi. He's had some problem with his vocal cords, and when we meet him in this documentary, he's rehearsing for a tour that may be a preamble to 40th anniversary tour, and he is debating whether or not to do that. Now, this is in some ways one of those straight ahead rock and roll documentaries that we're seeing lots of lately, and I'm all about those because I enjoy that story of rags to riches kind of. And Bon Jovi had huge success, so it works as that straight ahead story. Isn't this interesting how successful they were? I have a few problems with it in that I find John Bon Jovi, God bless him, a little earnest at times. It doesn't really float my boat, you know? And the other thing, and it's going to be heresy for Bon Jovi fans, but there are about five songs of theirs I enjoy, and everything else, I don't really, to be honest. This is going to really drive Bon Jovi fans mad, but I find it a bit Springsteen light, if I'm being honest. And I'm sorry, I hate taking digs off them, but I don't think I enjoyed this documentary as much as I thought I was going to, because the music didn't carry me, and John Bon Jovi himself, I didn't find him as beguiling company as I thought I might. To my mind, the greatest recent rock documentary about a musician is the Robbie Williams one on Netflix, because he's great company and has a mad story and a very entertaining and sometimes tragic story to tell. And I really like that one. But look, Thank You, Goodnight, The Bon Jovi Story is on Disney Plus. It's four parts. I could be wrong, okay? And it's a really a personal thing on this one. I'm not telling you not to watch it. If you're a Bon Jovi fan, you'll be there. You'll be all over it. But for the uninitiated or the indifferent fan of Bon Jovi, well, maybe not one for you. And listen, this is why they pay me the big bucks, to give you my opinion. Now, also in TV this week, it's back.
Dearest gentle reader, we have been apart for far too long. At last, London's fashionable set has made its return. And it seems that our bon ton is moving with the changing tide. So too is this author.
I cannot live at home any longer. I must take a husband.
Does my lady have a suitor in mind?
Is that her brother?
Colin.
brother. Under what foreign sun did you apparently get so sturdy?
Oh, well, it's good to see you.
Is it?
Something wrong?
Seems as though every Bridgerton was born to attract notice. For some of us, notice is very slight.
If a husband is what you seek, let me help you. Are we not friends?
Friends.
Now that is Bridgerton. Season 3 is upon us. Well, part 1 of that lands on the 16th of May and the second part's landing in June. And you may have heard about this already, but our own Nicola Coughlan is coming centre stage in this one. In case you don't know, and I'm assuming everyone knows about Bridgerton, but it is based on the highly successful series of books by Julia Quinn, and the success of it as a TV show has taken a lot of people by surprise. It's set in Regency London and it's all about young nobility marrying each other, and it has the Bridgerton family and indeed the Featheringtons famously at its centre. It also features the Queen, Queen Charlotte, Lady Danbury, and of course Lady Violet Bridgerton, who is the main matriarch in it. And season 3, we're back, and this time, and if you haven't really been following the series, this isn't going to make a huge amount of sense to you, but I can't give you the entire backstory of all the previous two seasons. But in this one, Nicola Coughlan, Penelope Featherington, has finally given up on her long-held crush on Colin Bridgerton, played by Luke Newton, after hearing his disparaging words about her at the end of last season. She's, however, decided it's time to take a husband, preferably one who will provide her with enough independence to continue her double life as the famed Lady Whistledown, far away from her mothers and sisters. But of course she lacks confidence, and Penelope's attempts in season 3 on marriage kind of fail spectacularly. Meanwhile, Colin, played by Luke Newton, has returned from his summer travels and he's a serious new look. People are calling him a sexy pirate in this. He's disheartened to realise that Penelope, who was his great friend, who always appreciated him, is giving him the cold shoulder, and he wants to win her back. So Colin offers to mentor Penelope in confidence to help her find a husband. But when the lessons start going a bit too well, Colin must grapple with whether or not he has feelings for her. And let's say it gets intriguing and complicated. Penelope Featherington, played by Nicola Coughlan, is front and centre in this one. And does she need any introduction? Derry Girls, Bridgerton, her recent series Big Mood. She is huge. She is one of the most exciting Irish, and indeed any nationality, actresses working today. So she is back. Colin Bridgerton is played by Luke Newton, and I got to talk to them recently about Bridgerton. Hi guys, how are you?
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well. Are you tired? Because you seem to have been doing this all day from what I gathered.
We're okay. We're getting
our
energy from...
But when they said the Irish coming at the end, I was like, right, yay, the whole crowd, let's go!
Let's go, let's go. And they saved the best for near the last, you know?
There you go.
Nicola, tell me this. I remember Mark Hamill talking about Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back, saying for 6 months he had to keep this massive secret. You've kind of had to do this twice. There was the whole Who is Lady Whistledown? And now in this season, without giving a spoiler, you two are very much front and centre of the story. Was that a weight to carry? Like, God, I got to keep this to myself and not tell parents and family and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I feel like non-disclosure agreements, it's like, you can't tell the fans, you can't tell press, but with my family, I went home, I was like, I'm Lady Whistledown and Julie Andrews is doing the voice. And they were like, you've ruined it. And I'm like, well, suck it up, Buttercup. Like, yeah. I have to keep it here from the rest of the world.
Got to tell someone.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah,
fair enough. I like your attitude to non-disclosures. I'm going to have to remember that.
No, Netflix look at me like, really? I'm like, oh, no, I'm kidding.
She's just joking. So tell me what happens in the very last episode. No, I'm joking. Luke, I had this experience. You're 31, I gather, if the internet is to be believed. Yeah. But you, in the previous season, you seemed very youthful, like a teenager. And then you're this man in this one. Like, for a viewer, the transformation is quite abrupt. Was that, were you struck by that? Was that tough to change gear like that?
Yeah. I feel like I wanted to make a conscious effort to portray Colin in a different way this season. I wanted him to come back and to feel like I use the example, you know, when sort of young men go away for the summer from their GCSEs or school or whatever, and then come back.
Or the leaving cert, as Nick would call it.
Yeah, that one. And then they come back and they've got stubble and they've got their voice is lower and they've got like they're 6'4" or whatever. Like, I really wanted to have that. Yeah, have a version of Colin that come back and he'd grown up and to have that, you know, competitive streak when he comes back and sees his older brothers who are much older than him and sort of feels like one of them now. So, I sort of relish the challenge of that. I rather enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, you pulled it off. Nicola, you know, I was talking to Paul Mescal and Andrew Scott, just a little name drop for you, you know.
And lads.
Yeah, they were talking about... And we won't get into specifics, but either of you can answer this. But when it comes to romance and maybe more, like we see this stuff on the screen and it's, oh, this is lovely or this is sexy or whatever. And Paul Mescal was going, you know, there's 13 hairy crewmen on a Monday morning watching you do this stuff. Like, do you find that funny that, you know, you guys might be doing romantic stuff on screen, but we don't see the fact that there is this army of people watching you?
Yeah.
Well, do you know what? It's one thing on Bridgerton, I think, because those intimate scenes or however you want to call them, they're an important part of the narrative. But we're really protected in them, so thankfully we don't have 13 hairy men. It's a very limited crew. We shot a scene in a carriage in which there was no one in there but us, so it feels quite intimate. And we have an intimacy coordinator who's incredible, who gives us, they kind of, if people under, like, they were like, what do they do? What's their job? Is it like a stunt? Yeah. Do they say kiss for 3 seconds and then touch their knee and then do this? It's not like that. There's like, these are the things we want to hit in this scene, but you go, like, we were in a position where we felt comfortable enough to like, to have control of it ourselves, which was great.
Yeah. Good. And Nicola, I'm sure in the last 6 years you haven't done an interview where Dairy Girls hasn't come up. And this unfortunately will be no exception, right? But it's just, I have to. Like, have you been surprised by the life that that show has and continues to have? I'm not saying it shouldn't have one, but...
Yeah, Claire's coming out scene keeps going viral on social media. And that is wild to me because I filmed that scene the very first week of Dairy Girls and I thought I had screwed it up. I'm not kidding. I'm not like looking for praise. But I remember finishing that day and going, I think I've gotten that wrong. I think I don't like the delivery of like Luck of the City. I was like, that's too much. It's too sassy for Claire. But then I see people like recreate it online. I'm like, that is insane to me that has the life it's had. It's really amazing to be part of a show that people love that way and to be part of two shows that are very different that people love in that way.
Wonderful. Luke, we're out of time. I'm sorry I Irished it up, but
I learned something new there, so I appreciate it.
Do you remember your
wonderful
Salon.
Wow, it's like I'm in a bar in Galway. This is
he's like a native, isn't he? Yeah,
big time. Lovely to see you. Continued success.
Thanks,
thank you so much.
Nicola Coughlan and Luke Newton there talking to me about the roles of Penelope Featherington and Colin Bridgerton in the new season 3 of Bridgerton. Now, it's famously from the stable of Shonda Rhimes. And this year, this season, season 3, there's a new showrunner. The showrunner is a very important person. That's basically the modern phrase for the person who brings it all together in TV these days. And the lady in question, who is the showrunner on season 3, is Jess Bronnell. And I had a chat with her about the new season of Bridgerton.
Hello, Jess. How are you?
How are you? Where are you phoning in from?
I am in from Dublin, Ireland.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing.
It is. Technology. And how we can watch shows like Bridgerton on our phones and large TV screens.
I hope you're watching it on something larger than a phone. There's too many grand details, you know?
If I had more time, I'd show you my big middle-class TV, which is just about 3 feet from us. It's massive. Just tell me this. I gather Shonda Rhimes rings you on a Saturday afternoon saying you're in charge now. In my experience, work calls on a Saturday are never good things. But did you get a bit of a, oh, sugar, what's this?
There was definitely something less PG than sugar. I was a little bit freaked out, a little bit worried because, she doesn't really call on a Saturday. I thought, what did I mess up? but it was a very lovely phone call. And after working with her for so long, it was really wonderful to know that she had the confidence in me to do the job.
Yeah, rightly so. Tell me this, you're far too successful a person for me to ask you to describe your job, but I'm going to do that anyway, only because there is still this sense of what does a showrunner actually do? Because people think it's running around getting the cast their teas and coffees or something like that. And yet, in a way, I think nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, a showrunner is, in essence, in charge of the production.
Yeah, I oversee the creative. And the thing that I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand is that it is firmly a writing job, which I reassert because writing is, what I do the most and what I love the most. So I oversee the writer's room, I manage the writers, I, do a pass on everything to standardize the voice of the show. And then when we're in production, I'm checking in with all of the department heads and signing off on all of the decisions in terms of production design, hair and makeup, costumes, et cetera, making sure there's a unified vision for the show.
Yes, well, you did an excellent job on it, and you're still standing after the whole thing being completed. Well, you're sitting,
Back
actually.
problems, actually. So it's
I
a
can imagine.
standing.
Yeah, I don't want to give any spoiler, but let's just say my fellow countrywoman, Nicola Coughlan, comes into her own in this season in a great way. But I read a thing again that you said that shadows are kind of at play in this season, which I like. Can you just tell me a little bit about that? What shadows are you referring to?
So the first episode is titled Out of the Shadows, and the last one is titled Into the Light. So we're playing with the idea that Nicola's character, Penelope, is someone who clings to the shadows. She's much more comfortable on the wall, and this season she's going to have to step out into the sunshine, metaphorically, which means stepping into the center of the room, having all the eyes on her, and be able to hold her confidence.
Yeah, I was going to be really pretentious and quote Plato and people living in caves and shadows, but I won't. That'll be far too pretentious. I
That's
can't even believe I
actually what
said
I
it.
intended, that I'm like really into Plato, so.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. But anyway, let's not bore everyone else with it. They wouldn't understand. Tell me this. You've probably been asked this a lot, but on a certain level, people. It's the flip side of a coin. People might say, Bridgerton, it's romantic drama. Have we not seen lots of that, or is the world not tired of it? And yet we have this huge success with Bridgerton, and it's very popular, and rightly so. So does that point to the fact that, people just love romantic dramas, and they always will, in the same way like they love resurrection stories or redemption tales?
I think a desire for love, whether it's romantic love or friendship love or family love, is the thing that unifies all of us. And I actually don't think there are enough stories about that fact and enough stories that really underline the gravity of relationships. We see a lot of violence, of course, and we love that. But to have love on our screens, I think is important, especially right
Yeah.
now.
Now more than ever, it would seem. Listen, we're out of time. I just want to say, I thought them because they don't want us to give spoilers and things, but I thought the music this season was brilliant. It really was. And you lean into my big screen TV going, what is that? Is that? Is that? I just thought the music was handled so well. So I'll end with a compliment.
Oh, thank you so much. I have to pass the compliment on to Justin Camps, who's our music supervisor, and Chris Bowers, who does our score. They did a fantastic job.
But you said you were in charge of everything, so.
I check in, and I really view my role as empowering people to do what they're great at and then stepping back and letting them do it. So I cannot take credit for the music or
Okay.
many other things, frankly.
Well, listen, lovely to talk to you, and I hope the back improves and continued success.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll do some yoga. Nice to meet you.
Thanks. You too. Bye,
Bye.
Jess. Jess Bronnell there talking to me about being showrunner on the new season of Bridgerton. After the break, more Bridgerton when I talk to Queen Charlotte, Lady Danbury, and Lady Violet Bridgerton. Now, you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. Now, before the break, we were talking Bridgerton with Nicola Coughlan and all sorts of people. Some more Bridgerton, because regular fans of Bridgerton will know that Queen Charlotte is the Queen, played by Golda Rochuvail. Lady Danbury is played by Adjoa Andhoy. And Ruth Gemmell
plays Lady Violet Bridgerton. Lady Violet Bridgerton is, of course, the mother of the Bridgertons, and she is trying to protect her children. Lady Danbury is a woman also trying to protect the various people on the London social scene. And Queen Charlotte, of course, is the Queen. And in this season, I should say, Hannah Dodd is kind of the new lady to watch from the Bridgertons. Hannah Dodd plays Francesca Bridgerton, who's going to be the jewel in this season's social scene and the woman that the Queen, Queen Charlotte, takes the most interest in. So I got to talk to Gola Rocheville, who plays Queen Charlotte, and Joa Andoa, who plays Lady Danbury, and Ruth Gammell, who plays Lady Violet Bridgerton. And Ruth Gammell, these are all great actresses, but I just want to mention Ruth Gammell. Too long to give you their CVs, but Ruth Gammell was famously playing opposite Colin Firth in Fever Pitch all those years ago. That will come up.
We know John from before.
Do we? Have we met from before?
Yeah, you've interviewed us before, babe.
Oh, wow. This is bad. I'm getting old. I was just going to make some joke about just three talented actresses burst up on my screen there. It's like the Mount Rushmore of acting talent. But I'm depressing myself now if we've interviewed each other before and I can't remember it.
I could be making it up as well. Hey.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. Well, listen, Golda, if I can start with you as the Queen, you know, what is it, do you think, in this season about Francesca that you're drawn to her? What is it that you think she's the one, do you think?
Because she's not... She doesn't push herself forward. She's very capable in her own skin. She's authentic in her body and in her soul, you know? And I think the queen always sees something in herself with her diamonds. I think that's the connection. And I think that solitary confidence that Francesca gives out is something that intrigues the Queen.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. A solitary confidence. It's a good phrase. Joa, with your character, Lady Danbury, what do you see as, I suppose, her motivations in things? Is it to make sure women are, you know, put on the right path if they are going to get married and that it's not anything that's not going to be good for them in life? I mean, do you see her as a kind of a wholly good character, I guess?
I think there's a phrase in therapy called the wounded healer.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think that's what Lady Danbury is. I think what we've seen from the origin story is we saw a vulnerable young woman married to somebody she didn't want to be married to in a loveless, sexually abusive marriage with children. And then he dies, thank the good Lord. But then she doesn't know if she can stay in the house, whether her son will get a title, whether they have any money, what she's, you know, she's vulnerable and she's widowed. And to be a widowed woman with no power in this era is deadly Dudley. So I think she remembers that vulnerable young woman who had to go, never mind being vulnerable and upset, how are we going to survive? What do we need to do? How do I protect my family? And I think going forward in her life, you know, we know that she had this great love for Violet Bridgerton's father. So anything to do with the Bridgertons, it's like a surrogate family for her. Mm. So she's totally invested in their well-being, actually, be that the girls or the boys. And I think that some of her engagement with how the ton runs is because it keeps her safe. Keeps her in power and, you know, protected in that way. But I also think within that, it's her instinct, and she can't stop it, to go, you're dangerous, get out of my sight, get away from the people I care about. You look like you might be good for them. Come on in. Let's see if we can make this work. So I think that motivates her. She wants people to live their best life. She wants to live their best life. And I think that's what she wants.
Yeah, a wounded healer is a good phrase. That's two good phrases so far. So, Ruth, no pressure.
No pressure. But, we're doing well.
Full house. Come on, we're aiming.
Yeah. No, I was going to say to you in this season, and again, this, all these spoilers I have to be so careful of, and I haven't committed any breaches so far today, and you're my fifth interview, so fingers crossed.
We, on the other hand.
Oh, yeah. All day long. So Lady Whistledown is, no, but I was going to say your relationship with Luke is lovely in this one. It's very, it's motherly. It's and in a way, I often think that, because I'm a big fan, I've watched every season, you are maybe the parental heart of the show in a way, because you want your kids, there's me with a good phrase, but yes, you want your kids to find love above all else. But your relationship with Luke and this with Colin is lovely. Tell me how you see that relationship.
Well, what's really lovely is that kind of steering someone in the right direction. There's a really lovely scene. There's a lovely scene when he sees Penelope with somebody else, and he starts talking to me about love and what I want for Francesca and all of that kind of thing, and what I wanted for myself. And then I realize he's talking about himself, and he's talking about Penelope.
Yeah.
Mm. It's just a lovely moment to realize that you now have to steer that person in that way. And then there's a later bit where I basically drop a few hints about, if you don't get your ass in gear and get down there, you're going to miss the boat, basically.
Yeah.
It's lovely. All, you know, he's only just come back from having been away. Violet, in the book, she's the kind of woman who misses the child who is not in front of her. If they're away, it's the one she misses.
Yeah.
So he's just home. He's grown up. But has he grown up? So it's
great. Yeah.
It's lovely. She steers all her children in that way. And particularly, but it's really lovely to see this one.
And, you know, we were joking there about spoilers and stuff, and you've been dropping flankers and all that. But all joking aside, like, I was talking to Nicola earlier and Luke. Do you find it hard with, like, friends and family? And any of you can answer this, because there is a lot of intrigue about the show and who's going to end up with who and who is who. Any of you can answer, as I say, but do you find it hard to, you know, oh, I can't tell my partner about this or whatever?
I
say everything to my partner.
Yeah, I mean,
but I'm lucky because she's not interested.
Well, same in our house. My kids are like, oh, well done, mum, you're having a good time. Yeah, all right. Honestly, they're living their best life. Go on, mummy, do your thing.
Listen, there's 1 minute left, and I have to address this one to Ruth. But Ruth, the first thing I saw you in was Fever Pitch. Mm-hmm. And I'm a lifelong Everton fan for my sins. So I really relate to that man who occasionally puts football above all else. Have you particular memories of playing that character opposite Colin Firth as this Arsenal-obsessed lunatic who did love you?
Yes, one of my very fond memories of, we were in the old Arsenal.
Highbury. Yeah.
And there were hundreds of essays of extras and, you know, policemen, supporters, all that kind of thing. And somebody was having a spliff, and one of the policemen came up and said, can you put that out? And he laughed. But unfortunately, he was a real policeman, and he took him away.
Right.
You know what? My husband's a gooner. And this friend, we went to see the film. We'd read the book. We went to see the film. And at one point, one of the characters says something and it's wrong. And Colin Firth and Howard leans over to me and goes, no, it wasn't. It was a blah, blah, blah. And then Colin Firth's character goes, blah, 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 it was a blah, blah. And Howard looked at me and went, that's my life. And I went, I know, I'm her. And then we get to work together. So it's been very lovely.
In circles we move. Well, it was lovely to see you all. And Golda, if we've met before and I can't remember, my eternal shame, I'm very sorry. But lovely to see you now.
Don't worry, it's lovely to see you now.
Super. Thank you, guys.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Golda Rochevale, who plays Queen Charlotte there, and Joa Andho, who plays Lady Danbury, and Ruth Gemmell, who plays Lady Violet Bridgerton, talking to me there about their roles in Bridgerton, and season 3 premieres on the 16th of May. So that's next week. Up next, something very different. Wes Ball, the director of The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now, you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. I'm John Fardy. Now, the big cinema release of the week is The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, or Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. The Planet of the Apes
has been going on for a long, long time. And this is the 10th overall film since we had the 1968 version with Charlton Heston. And the Planet of the Apes has been TV series and cartoons and books, and it has held the imagination for a very long time. In this one, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, 300 years after the events of the War of the Planet of the Apes, that's the previous one, ape civilizations have emerged from the oasis to which Caesar had led them, had led his fellow apes, while humans have regressed into a kind of feral, primitive state. It's an interesting premise. When the ape king Proximus Caesar, armed with weapons forged from lost human technologies, perverts Caesar's teachings to enslave other clans, the chimpanzee hunter Noah embarks on a harrowing journey alongside a human girl named Maya to determine the future for apes and humans alike. This one stars Owen Teague and Freya Allen and Kevin Gerard, and they're obviously digitized up, but they are acting. But work has been done to them. They've been CGI'd up to a certain extent, but they are acting, it has to be said. Now, this latest iteration, which is very entertaining, I have to say, because I did see it, is directed by a man called Wes Ball. And I had a word with him earlier in the week about returning to Planet of the Apes. How's it going? Wes, do you prefer Wes or Wes?
Ah, you can do whatever you want. I usually like Wes, but you know, it doesn't matter. I'll take whatever you want.
It's an Irish-American thing. Let's go with Wes. Tell me this. I spoke to James Mangold last year about the new Indiana Jones movie, and I said, you know, taking over the keys to this kingdom, in that case, like, is it scary? And he said, I just tried not to crash the car. I mean, it must be a big deal and a bit of a pressure. Like, these movies go back to the late 60s, Charlton Heston, all that stuff. You know the history better than I do, but do you take a deep breath and go, okay, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, honestly, that happens early on, right? You really wrestle with all those choices in the very beginning. Like, do we want to do this? Does this deserve to be made? You know, and honestly, we kind of fell in love with the story and the concept and the potential of it all. And that's what you ultimately kind of like, you know, dive into and focus on and hold on to tight. Because, you know, of course, it's always compromise, always challenges along the way of making a movie. It's just difficult stuff. But you're always kind of hoping and dreaming that thing, that initial thing that got you so inspired in the beginning, you know, holds true. And that's certainly the case for this movie for us. And you tend to not, at least we try not to, like, kind of let the pressure of all those other stuff that you can't control bog you down in the process. But you're right. And for me, this was very much like I did feel like I was being given the keys to the expensive car in the garage. And, you know, we try not to crash it. But I really wanted to kind of open it up and see what it was capable of. You know what I mean? So it was a lot of fun. I feel very humbled that I got the chance to do this, you know.
Well, you certainly didn't crash the car. And actually, I was going to say there are, and I didn't mean this, but when we talk about cars, what I like about it is there's a, without giving a spoiler, there's a road movie element to it in a sense that there's a journey that the guys go on, and there are no cars, or are there? But was that part of the appeal as well? That kind of, you know, they're going somewhere as opposed to just fighting each other in a forest.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of inherent to the story. It is kind of a road movie. It is a bit of a journey, especially for this character of Noah. It's we're ultimately introducing a new character that goes on this great journey of discovery for himself, and it's going to change him profoundly by the end of the movie, so that we can hopefully continue these stories with these characters. You know,
yeah,
That is fun. We get to see different locations and kind of have an adventure this time, which is a slightly different kind of a mode for our movie compared to the last three. That was a lot of fun, you know, kind of a adventure, you know.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, at this screening I was at, and I presume it's at all of them yesterday, there was a clip beforehand of the actors, for want of a better phrase, in costume with some of the technology on them and showing us what was going on. Was that, like, are you trying to convey to people, look, there are, you know, not science fiction elements, but there are effects here, but there are also very much actors working here. Is that the motivation for putting that at the start of the film?
Well, definitely not going to be in the start of the film for the movie. That won't be.
Okay. That was just for me then, was it?
I don't know exactly what you saw, but it is fascinating. I think in the behind the scenes stuff, we're definitely going to celebrate that stuff, because I think it is pretty amazing what actually happens here. These are really, you know, craftspeople that are working on these images and making it, you know, and creating art. And I think that deserves some, you know, good pats on the back for all the VFX artists and all the makeup artists and the costumers and the set designers and everyone that kind of contributes to making these movies. You know, it's fascinating stuff.
Tell me this, with directors, I'm always interested. You haven't done any acting or have that I could see in your biog. Has that ever appealed to you?
No. I want to be behind the camera, but you know, I imagine the cast would probably say that I basically act everything out anyway for them, you know? So, yeah. But I, you know, turn on the camera, suddenly I shut down. So I belong in the behind the scenes, you know?
Fair enough. And then finally, you know, you mentioned, you know, where a movie starts out from the idea, and then there's all this industry to get it done. And like, these are big movies, and I could see that yesterday when I saw it. Is it like, at this part of the process, are you just kind of, you seem upbeat and everything, but is there a, oof, I can't believe we got all that made? Because I presume it's a year, 18 months of your life. I guess I'm asking you, are you exhausted by the process?
Oh, definitely. I left it all in the field on this one. It's been almost 5 years since I started.
Wow.
So, you know, we dealt with COVID and lots of other little kind of things along the way, and just developing the script and just starting from scratch, basically. And then post itself was a year and a couple months, just the editing of it, the thing. So it's a very complicated, you know, very focused, intense process for a long stretch of time. And I couldn't be more happy with the result. I think everyone did a really great job, and you know, a lot of people contributed to this thing to make it what it is. And you know, hopefully audiences will accept it. You know,
I'm sure they will. Well, listen, the best of luck with it, and I'll see you down the road. Cheers.
All right, cheers.
Are you familiar with the concept of evolution? In their time, humans were capable of many great things.
Noah!
They could fly like eagles fly. They could speak across oceans.
Clip there from Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which is in cinemas from this Friday, the 10th of May. And you heard me talking there to its director, Wes Ball. That is it for this week. Thank you for listening. We'll do it all again next week. Just remind you, this show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend and have a safe week ahead.